You could be anywhere doing anything, but you're hanging out with us. We appreciate that. So wherever you're listening and however you're listening, we appreciate you guys for listening. And with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another exciting episode of the Game Plan Podcast. Alex Goodwin is my name. You can follow me on Twitter at Alex Goodwin TSM. Again, it's on Twitter at Alex Goodwin TSM. That's T as in tacos, S as in sangria, M as in margaritas. Kennedy Miller.
Yes, sir.
Where can they find you on Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter at underscore Kennedy Miller underscore. Again, that's underscore Kennedy as in the former NFL offensive lineman Cortez Kennedy and the former NBA All-Star Reggie Miller. Underscore Kennedy Miller underscore.
All right. Aaron Okonafua, where can they find you on Instagram or wherever else you are because you kind of still in Twitter jail?
You can find me on Instagram at Aaron, A-A-R-O-N, the great with two underscores. Again, that's Aaron, A-A-R-O-N, the great, because I am the greatest, with two underscores. And that's where you can find me on Instagram.
All right. All right. Getting right into it. We are up to the NBA Conference Finals. We've got the Clippers and the Suns and Milwaukee and Atlanta in the Conference Finals. Our top two seeds are out of the playoffs. So, guys, when I asked you this question to start it off, who is a bigger disappointment? Utah losing four straight to the Clippers, the last two without Kawhi Leonard, or the process in the 76ers losing in seven to the Atlanta Hawks? Kennedy, I'll start with you.
I'll just start with the Jazz. I'm not as disappointed as I am in Philly. Number one, because even though the Jazz were the number one seed, we knew they weren't really the best team in the Western Conference. Like, I think coming into the playoffs, we wouldn't have put them over the Lakers. We wouldn't have put them over the Clippers in a seven-game series. Now, for them to be up 2-0, then for the Clippers to come back and tie it and Kawhi to be out, you had plenty of opportunities to win that series. However, Quinn Snyder got outcoached. And Paul George played well. I'm sick of people giving Ty Lue so much flack because, he wasn't really coaching. LeBron was coaching Cleveland. Well, now he's proved to you he can actually coach. Okay. He did something that Doc Rivers did not do last year and he made adjustments. He threw out other people in different lineups to expose the Mavericks for one. And then to expose the Jazz. He made the three-time defensive player of the year, one of the most overrated players in the NBA today. He made him look mortal because he basically played five out. And Rudy Gobert couldn't close out to the three-point line, and Terrence Mann had 39 points. I'm disappointed, not as disappointed. Philadelphia, on the other hand. I have defended Ben Simmons for years. Years! When everybody said, he needs a jump shot. He needs to do this. And I'm like, well, okay. He's got one flaw. Everything else on the floor, he does extremely well. He's got another flaw. He can't make free throws. And now he's in his own head. There is no reason that you should lose as a number one seed, home court advantage to the Atlanta Hawks. Not saying the Hawks are bad. Trae Young is great. He's the next young, small point guard to really play well in the NBA, and I'm really rooting for them. But I thought that Philly would win this series in like five or six games. I thought that Joel Embiid, and he kind of tore his meniscus, but he still averaged like 33-10 for the series. I thought that he and Ben Simmons would be too much to stop. And I think the telling moment, the way that their season ended, Ben Simmons passed up a dunk, and Joel Embiid turned the ball over, which got, his seventh turnover, and then he had eight before that, so 15 turnovers in two games. Doc Rivers, you're not off the hook. You're not off the hook just yet, but I'll give you a pass because this is season one with this team, and you wanted to see what you could do with this roster, but Ben Simmons and Giannis to a certain extent, what are you doing in the offseason? What are you doing? I'm tired of seeing pickup videos. Work on your game. Go see a sports psychologist. Talk to somebody, because clearly it's got to be somewhat mental. I saw a report today. Ben Simmons might change hands shooting. Change hands. Do whatever you got to do, because it's not working. And the process over 10 years has failed. Never been past second round.
I'll say this as it refers to Ben Simmons. You know how they say any of us have ever seen people who have had substance abuse issues, issues with alcohol and things like that, and other people want them to get help, other people want them to be better, but they always say, you can't be better until you want it for yourself, right? Ben Simmons got to want this for himself. I think Ben Simmons' turning point might have been when he passed up that wide open dunk right at the bucket to pass the ball to Tybalt. And why did he pass that up? Because he didn't want to go to the free throw line. He doesn't want to shoot the ball. Like, previously I used to say Ben Simmons can't shoot. No. It's not about him not being able to shoot, because at this point we don't know if he actually can or cannot shoot, because he doesn't shoot. He's terrified to shoot. And the thing, like, the most damning part about Ben Simmons is this. Ben Simmons is effectively Draymond Green. Don't get me wrong. I think Draymond Green is a fine basketball player. He is a glue guy for a championship team. You didn't draft Ben Simmons number one overall to be Draymond Green. Ben Simmons is far more physically talented and gifted than Draymond Green. And you're not paying Ben Simmons $150 million over the next 4 years to be Draymond Green. So when people talk about, oh, the Sixers can trade Ben Simmons to who? Like, who are they going to trade him to? And everybody been talking about trade him to Portland and this, that, and the third. Like, what do y'all think? Y'all think Portland, Oregon don't get TNT? They saw that too. Aaron, who in their right mind is going to trade for Ben Simmons at this point? Like, what fool is going to do this? Well, am I tripping? Help me out, man.
Nah, you're not tripping at all. Nobody in their mind at this current time is going to trade for Ben Simmons. I think this was a show me year, especially for his shooting, and he showed it. He showed us what he's about. He clearly is not working in the offseason. It kind of goes back to what Kennedy asked. Like, what are you doing during the offseason when you see how bad your shot looks during these games? Like, you have to be a little embarrassed or something, right? He was terrified to even put the ball in the air, it felt like, during this series. Honestly, I feel like, to answer the main question, I feel like I'm more disappointed in the Jazz. But, man, I really am disappointed in Ben Simmons in particular. And I think I have to give it to neither team and just give my disappointment at all overall to Ben Simmons. He really, I mean, you're a professional basketball player, dude. After a while, you have to pick up your shot, or at least put up shots, try to put the ball in the hoop. And he clammed up. And I didn't think he had that in him. I didn't think he had that, you know, that type of personality, but I guess I was wrong. So, I don't know. That was a tough thing to watch. That was cringe, to say the least.
And, I was going to say Kennedy, you had something? My fault.
No, I will say this, because as much as I just got on Ben Simmons, his market value has went down. But there are still teams that could utilize the services of Ben Simmons, like a Portland Trailblazers team who has just lacked a competent wing since Dame and CJ have arrived. What have I said millions of times on this podcast? They're not going to win a championship being the two best players. Now you put Dame and Ben together and you construct around the rest of the roster, you just compared him to Draymond Green as another Draymond and Steph. I would, and one more team, Aaron, would you be upset if they made a trade and Ben and Luka are in Dallas together?
No, not with Ben and Luka. It goes back to what you were saying with the surround him with a certain group of players. I feel like Ben Simmons could fly. But even with that being said, at some time, we're going to have to not be afraid to put up shots. You get surrounded with the best shooters, but it's going to come down to him having to shoot the ball, even if it's close to the rim at some point in time. So,
agreed.
I would like him in Dallas. I would definitely like him in Dallas, but if he was going to come down here and work with the shooter, then yeah, I'd love him in Dallas to answer the question.
Kennedy, we talked about something the other day, right? And you mentioned that you have to transfer some of your anger from one particular player who plays for the Clippers. He has the Shamar Moore braids at this point in time. I don't want to call him your nemesis, Kennedy Miller, but this man has long drawn your scorn. So I'm going to let Kennedy Miller address the one, the only playoff P, Paul George. Kennedy Miller, get it out of your system.
I must put personal bias aside. I have long slandered Paul George since his Indiana days, probably since a 2017 series when he passed up a game-winning shot against Cleveland game one, passed to CJ Miles, and then basically criticized CJ Miles after the game, said I should be shooting the ball when he was the one that passed it to him.
I would I've never forgive him for that.
You know it. You know it, AO. I've since criticized Paul George for, 4 years for not being that guy. You know, he said he wanted to stay in Indiana for the rest of his career. Then he demands a trade. Then he says he grew up a Lakers fan. Then he goes to the Clippers and says, well, he was always a Clippers fan. That's neither here nor there. But after his epic collapse last year, being up 3-1 against the Denver Nuggets, I slandered him. I don't know how many straight times on this show, how many times in real life, anybody that's ever talked to me about basketball. Paul George has been balling. He's been hooping. He's one of the biggest reasons why they came back and they beat the Jazz. He's a big reason, you know, why they're in the conference finals for the first time in Clipper history. I have to give him his credit, and I have to transfer that bias that I have against Paul George. I have to do it to Ben Simmons now. Because Ben Simmons has just disgusted me. Because I was actually, I picked the Sixers. I think this is 2 years in a row. I picked the Sixers to make the finals. And he's the biggest reason why they haven't reached their full potential. With reservations, okay, I'm going to say the reservations that for the rest of these playoffs, he balls the same way that he did. Because there's a very good chance he could just falter again and just be Paul George. This is not the time for that. Paul George, I'm sorry. You've been hooping. You've been playing like a top 10 player, top 15, whatever you want to call him, that you are. Keep up the good work, young man.
You know, Kennedy, I'm proud of you right now. It took growth for you to come out here on this show when we have almost 4 years worth of audio of you running Paul George down. That's growth. I'm proud of you. I really am.
In the near future, I will not refer to him as playoff piss.
Ty Lue and Chauncey Billups have done a whole lot with that team. Like, just strategically and just having a more cohesive unit than they had last year. Because, like, when you watch them play at times in that Utah series when the whole team was healthy, you're like, all right, this is why people thought they could beat the Lakers. Because they're this talented when they're that locked in. Aren't too many people that can play with these dudes, right? But even when Kawhi goes out, Paul George steps up, Reggie Jackson steps up, Terrence Mann steps up, and everybody just continues to play well and doesn't really miss a beat. That's a sign of good coaching. And like you said earlier, Kennedy, I think a lot of people give LeBron all the credit for Ty Lue's success, essentially. But I think people forget that those teams Ty Lue coached in Cleveland, they were flipping the roster upside down, essentially mid-year. Like when Ty Lue gets the job in January of 2016, they flipped the roster. They flipped the way they were playing, right? Ty Lue made those strategic adjustments in the 2016 finals to start switching everything and to go small and beat the Warriors at their own game. So I do think as an NBA community, we do need to put some more respect on Ty Lue's name as one of the top 6 or 7 coaches in the league.
Yep.
So now, do I think the Clippers, we're probably going to get into this into the next segment. Can they get to the finals without Kawhi? Maybe not. Because I'm sorry, I don't think they can do this without him. Like, now if Kawhi pops up in game 4 and it's in a, 2-1, something close to that, they can do this. They got a shot. But if it's 3-0, it's curtains.
Definitely without Kawhi, they can't do it. And I think it just more depends on when Chris Paul comes back. So Chris Paul's not playing game 2, but like you said, if they win game 2 and Chris Paul comes back game 3 and they steal that, if they go 3-0, it's over. You know, now if it's 2-1, like you said, it's a chance. Phoenix is a really good team. And the Clippers are a really good team. A lot of people talk about, like how it was a theory, like, buyout players are buyout players for a reason, right? Like there's a reason they're getting bought out. They don't bring much to the team. But the reason why buyouts are so important is a guy like Nick Batum. I knew from the jump that Nick Batum was going to be a pivotal piece for this Clippers team when he got bought out from Charlotte after he looked like a bum on a huge contract, and he goes to the Clippers and he becomes one of the more important role players on that team. Then you got guys like Rondo, who is a basketball savant, who barely plays for a whole series. And this series, he's probably going to get a bunch of minutes. Guy like Boogie Cousins, who's probably going to get some backup big minutes, not as Serge Ibaka's out. Like the timely and the necessary contributions that they did to this roster to fix some holes has been key. Because without Nick Batum, they might not beat Dallas. Because who else are they going to put at their five? And who else is going to do all those things like Shaq always talks about, like glue guys, to put everything together? And without Nick Batum, they're definitely not beating, you know, Utah. So I just think I like the moves that they made. And these moves are, they were playoff moves. And now they're proving themselves to be right.
Speaking of another buyout guy that they got, Reggie Bobby Shmurda Jackson.
Oh, man. How could I forget him?
Yeah, I was going to say, man, the thing about Reggie Jackson is Reggie Jackson has irrational confidence in himself. Reggie Jackson thinks every time he steps on the floor that he is the best player on the floor. And sometimes I can get him in trouble. But other times, in big moments, you can see why he has such irrational confidence in himself, because that dude's a baller. He can just flat out hoop.
Without Kawhi, he's been the second best player on the team. I mean, it's like some shots. I'm like, I know he's not about to hit this. But then I remember there is a reason why he got the max from Detroit. You know, there's a reason why he was in late game situations in Oklahoma City, because I mean, the dude has game. It's not like, you know, on the flip side, it was a guy like Cameron Payne. Who was almost out the league. You know, we kind of question, you know, whether he belonged, and he's turned himself into a solid player on a conference finalist team. But we always knew Reggie that game. It was just your thought process, your IQ, your shot selection. Can you really be the point guard on a really good team? Or are you just, you know, a stat stuffer on a really bad one?
You know, I think that's the honest, like one of the more interesting things about that the Clippers have done this year is that really since, I want to say game three or game four of that Mavs series, Paul George has been the point guard. And they've had Paul George setting everything up in dishing and doing everything like that. Like, I think at a certain point, they've really helped maximize what he can do.
Yeah, because the thing is, why I didn't give the Mavs or the Jazz a shot is because the Clippers have too many wings for them, both of them. And Luka played out of his mind. But at some point, Dallas was going to have to figure out how to stop Kawhi, Paul George, and then you got, you know, other 6'8 guys like Marcus Morris and Nick Batum, and they didn't have those guys. So they had to resort to playing a zone against one of the best 3-point shooting team in history. And they shot the lights out. Same thing with the Jazz. You play five out, and we have all these wings that can do all these different things. And then you got a guy like Terrence Mann that comes in and just shoots corner threes, 39 points. Ball game.
I was going to say, Aaron, now about your Dallas Mavericks, how are you over there feeling? Because I'm pretty sure you were like riding high for a while, and you picked the Mavs to win that series in six games. So I'm pretty sure you felt like you was a genius. Like, you know, you saw what the rest of us didn't see. And then Kawhi happened.
Yeah. Didn't see that one coming. Don't know how I missed that one. He's been a constant, it seems like, every year. He kind of does the same thing, too. He goes down 2-0, and then he's like, oh, okay, I guess I'll show up. It's weird how that works. But I feel like I was right in a sense. Hear me out. I feel like I was right because the Mavericks came out there and did what I said they would do for the first two games. So they hit them right in the mouth. So I figured they were going to continue with that and follow through. However, yes, Kawhi showed up. Sure. But I expected that to happen. What I did not expect was for our 7'3", $150 man to not show up, to disappear, actually, to be there for the first quarter, and then no longer, I just thought he wasn't even on the floor anymore after that.
How much of a rhythm can he get when the only time he touches the ball when he's like in the corner about to jack up a three, right? Like, the whole offense, it seemed, the entire playoffs, was handing the ball to Luka. We're going to do pick and roll, trying to get either a slow big or undersized guard on the switch. We're going to go from there, right? Like, that was the entire offense, right? So how much of a rhythm could he reasonably get when he's just standing over there next to Dorian Finney-Smith ready to shoot? You know what I mean? And Porzingis is more of like a post-up type of guy. So what rhythm could he get? I kind of, watching him kind of be kind of ineffective and kind of just out there, kind of felt the same way I did in 2017 when Kawhi Leonard was really starting to ascend for San Antonio, and seeing LaMarcus Aldridge just out there, couldn't get a rhythm, couldn't really get anything done. That same sort of deal, right? But also, I think the big reason that why the Mavs lost, and after watching those first two games, I came to one conclusion. I said in order for the Mavericks to win this series and win games in this series, everything has to break right. Luka has to score 40 points for them to be competitive, number one. Number two, the rest of the role players, they got to get 14 to 17 out of three or four of those guys. The Clippers have to either not shoot well or, you know, have a really bad cold spell. All of those things had to happen for them to win games. If one of those things was off, they were going to lose. I think that's how that series ended up getting decided. But I will criticize Porzingis on this. The fact that they had to put Boban Marjanovic in the game as a rim protector is a damning indictment of Porzingis. Boban and Porzingis, there's an inch difference in height between the two of them. And the fact that you had to put out Boban, who's a big stiff, who just completely immobilized your defense, that tells me Porzingis can't protect the rim. That tells me Porzingis is useless on one end of the floor.
I just don't understand how he's useless on that end of the floor at that size. And he wasn't acting like this in New York. I understand he had some injuries and whatnot, but come on, man. We signed you for a reason. And I get it. It's hard for you to catch a rhythm when you have a top five player on your team. But this is one of those situations in which you kind of just have to say, oh, well, you're trying to win a playoff series, and right now your teammate is unstoppable. I get egos do get in the way, but at what point in time does logic take over and you think to yourself, let me just do what I can do when I am asked to do it? Throws me the ball, instead of jacking up a three, maybe I can hit somebody with a jab step, maybe a nice little sweep through, drive to the rim, see what happens. You're 7'3". You can take off, keep your arms in the air, and maybe get a dunk, maybe get fouled. You shoot free throws well. Like, if he's not a Ben Simmons type of player. If he gets put on the line, he's going to hit his free throws. If you leave him open, he's going to hit his shots. But he was not aggressive. He wanted to be, Steph Curry out there for what? This is the classic situation of the guy at the rec who's too big shooting threes when he should be in the paint. And I get it. You're not a guy who bangs in the post. I understand. We're not even really asking you to bang in the post. Just put your long arms in the air, disrupt your shot, grab some rebounds. Like, what is going on? We're not asking for too much.
I think that the Dallas Mavericks are going to have an interesting dilemma of how they're going to attack this offseason. First of all, their coaching position is the best job that's available right now. So every coach would be looking to take that position. But second off, I think that Luka is going to, as far as the organization, they're going to have to look at Luka like how teams have looked at LeBron. And I say that in terms of the players that fit around them. Everybody can't play with those two guys. If you're rhythm players like Brandon Ingram, who has to dribble before he can, you know, really score it, they won't fit well with him. They need spot up shooters, but they also need another playmaker that when they've got their 40 and maybe they're a little gassed, that guy can create his own shot, i.e. Kyrie for LeBron in 2016 and 2017.
We're going to have to leave it right there, but we will be right back with more of the Gameplay and Podcast on the other side of the break. Coming up next, we're going to pick the conference finals matchups. Hawks, Bucks, Clippers, Suns. When we come back, don't go anywhere. They told me put my hands up and have my hands. I think they got the wrong one. I'm sick and tired of running. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Game Plan Podcast. Alex Goodwin is my name. You can follow me on Twitter at Alex Goodwin TSM. Again, it's on Twitter at Alex Goodwin TSM. That's T as in Texas, S as in Southern, M as in Maryland. Kennedy Miller.
Yes, sir.
Where can they find you on Twitter?
Find me on Twitter at _KennedyMiller_. And that's _Kennedy. As in former President John F. Miller, as in the former NBA All-Star Reggie Miller _KennedyMiller_.
Aaron, our good friend who is still in Twitter jail, where can they find you on Instagram?
Yes, sir. I am currently locked up in Twitter jail, so you can find me on Instagram at Aaron the Great with 2 underscores. Again, that is Aaron, A-A-Ron, the Great, no spaces, followed by 2 underscores.
All right. All right. Coming up here on our final segment of the show. So we are going to pick the NBA Conference Finals matchups. We're going to start with the Clippers and the Suns. The Suns won game one behind Devin Booker's 40-point triple-double. So Kennedy Miller, who do you see winning this series and why?
This is tough because both teams have players that might return at some point. Well, Chris Paul is seems like he's definitely going to be returning at some point, but I think I'm going to roll with the Suns. I mean, they have all the confidence in the world. They beat the champs in round one, swept Denver in round two. Devin Booker's been playing out of his mind. And Chris Paul, when he comes back, has one of, if not the best IQ in basketball and is one of the best leaders in basketball. You couple that with a young big and DeAndre Ayton and some great role players in Mikal Bridges, Jay Crowder. And like Cam Johnson and Cam Payne have been playing well. This Suns team is legit and they're peaking at the right time. The Clippers by no means are any slouch. They should have all the confidence in the world as well, being down 0-2 multiple times, being the only team to ever come back from multiple 0-2 deficits. But I think I'm going to roll with the Suns in either 6 or 7 games. I'm not sure how healthy Kawhi is and I feel like they're stringing this thing along. It's really reminded me of the San Antonio year when they kept saying, oh, you know, he might be back next week, the week after that. Sorry to bring up any old memories, Alex.
This is PTSD. You didn't have to do this to me. You really did.
But the strained knee is kind of like same thing as the strained quad. You know what I mean? Like
absolutely.
I feel like they're just stringing this thing along. And I feel like if he said he's not playing and he's out indefinitely, it's going to be longer than the first 2 games. So we'll see how he progresses. And if he comes back, how will he look? Because we know there are times where Kawhi will dunk on a guy like Derek Favors and run down like nothing happened. And then there are times where Kawhi just looks a bit slow.
Labored.
It looks like he's laboring and he's 29. And I think that's really the case why, you know, I was listening to some and it was like a theory. That's why he doesn't guard the best players every night because he just physically can't anymore. And be asked to score 28, 29 points a game. It's just too much to do on an every night basis. How will he look when he comes back and will he come back? I have Phoenix in 6 or 7.
I'll say this about Kawhi. So the big reason Kawhi doesn't play in back-to-back nights, so, you know, 3 games and 4 nights and things like that. And part of the reason he ended up out of San Antonio was, you know, issues regarding he has a degenerative condition in it with his legs. Right. He has problems with his quads, problems with his knees. So that's why they kind of hold him out of games. You know, once the game is well in hand, pull him out. Or, you know, if they're playing Detroit on the second night of a back to back, like, not Kawhi, you'll sit this one out. So it's for things like this. I think if Kawhi Leonard is healthy, that's a big capital I, capital F. I think the Clippers can win a championship. If he's at full go, I think what they've been able to do this postseason, as well as Ty Lue is coaching, as well as Paul George and Reggie Jackson, everybody else is playing, I think they can get that done. I think without him, I think they can push the Suns to 6 games, probably 7 games. I think they'd probably lose in the 7th game because, you know, the Suns have game 7 on their home floor. And the Clippers, as far as fatigue goes, they've been playing every other night for the past 3 weeks. And with this quick turnaround to start the conference finals, I think that hurts them a bit, you know. I feel like it took them a second to get their wind and to get their legs under them in that Utah series. And once they got their legs under them, they blew Utah off the floor. I think the same thing might happen here. They'll win at least 2 games. So I'm going to go Suns in 6. Aaron, what about you?
I am going to say Suns in 6. But honestly, it really depends on when Chris Paul comes back. He's definitely the difference maker for me. So, when he comes back and what he does when he comes back is going to make or break the series for the Suns. Kawhi's injury seems pretty serious. It doesn't, like you guys have said, not to piggyback, but it's true. I don't think he's going to be back anytime soon. And dare I say for this series, it seems pretty serious though. So, and then if the Suns take a 2-0 lead, I know from what I've seen in the past, I know it's probably not a safe bet to take them if they get into a lead. But if they get into a lead, I feel like Chris Paul is the type to make sure to get the job done and see it through. So my submission is going to go over the Suns to take it in six.
I was going to say another thing I think that pushes the Suns over the top is DeAndre Ayton. I think with T. Lou in the past two series, what he's been able to exploit is the immobility and the lack of offensive skill of the bigs of Dallas and the bigs of Utah. Because we remember Boban Marjanovic, big stiff, can't really move. Rudy Gobert, big stiff, can't really move outside of the paint. Right? And then on the offensive end, all those dudes can do is really putbacks and dunks. Right? DeAndre Ayton is not only mobile, but he also is extremely skilled on the offensive end of the floor. So I think with that, Ayton essentially is going to be the X factor. Because if the Clippers have to play Ivica Zubac, they then can't go five out.
Correct.
True.
I think Aiden's going to be the key. If Ayton can, you know, be mobile, if Ayton cannot get played off the floor, Suns in six. If Ayton starts having issues or whatever adjustment T. Lou starts to make, because T. Lou's going to make an adjustment. Like, I guess sometimes it takes T. Lou a second to figure out what he needs to do. But once he figures out what he needs to do, he does it and it works.
I think DeAndre Ayton, when Chris Paul comes back, because the thing with DeAndre Ayton that's really stood out to me these playoffs is none of this is forced. It's not like they're running sets for DeAndre Ayton. He's just been more aggressive than Gobert and Marjanovic against the Clippers so far. It's only been one game, but he's aggressive around the rim. He attacks the mismatch. He crashes the boards when a guy like Nick Batum is on him. And then, okay, if they take out Nick Batum, they put in Zubac, okay, he's a little bit faster than Zubac, right? So he can run the floor. And when a guy like Chris Paul comes, who's a perfect table setter, who basically got Tyson Chandler and David West a lot of money and all-star nods, you get a young guy like DeAndre Ayton, he's going to be really tough to stop with Chris Paul and Devin Booker doing pick and rolls with him all game. And shooters in the corner, Jay Crowder and Mikal Bridges. So it is going to be, I'm interested to see what the adjustment will be for Ty Lue, because we saw Boogie come in and had 11 points in 5 minutes to start off his time. But we also saw that when DeAndre Ayton was sitting on the bench with Dario Saric, when DeAndre Ayton came back in, they hunt Boogie in pick and rolls every time and see how much he can move lateral, and he can't. So it's going to be an interesting chess match between both teams.
Absolutely. So we're going to move on to the Eastern Conference Finals and the Milwaukee Bucks against Rayford Trey Young and the Atlanta Hawks.
Shout out to his dad, Rayford Young.
So Kennedy Miller, who you got?
I have the Bucks. Bucks and possibly five. I'm going to say six. This is the Bucks' best case scenario for a conference finals matchup. Like, the Hawks have given them a little bit of problems in the regular season. But I think with the addition of Jrue Holiday guarding a guy like Trey Young, it's going to be pretty tough for the Hawks, especially with him losing DeAndre Hunter, to stop a trio of Giannis, Jrue, and Middleton, who showed me a lot, because he was another guy that I criticized over the times why Milwaukee couldn't win, because you had to rely on a guy like Middleton. You showed me a lot this past series. And I think with Kawhi's injury, you know, the uncertainty behind it, the Bucks should be favored out of these four teams. The Bucks should be the favorite to win the NBA championship. I do. And I said it at the start of the playoffs. I said whoever wins out of Milwaukee and Brooklyn in the second round will probably win the championship. They'll at least be in the finals. So I'm going to stick to that. I think, like I said, I'm leaning towards six because Atlanta has been playing really well. But I'm going to say Bucks in six.
Aaron, who you got?
I really like the Hawks. I really like the makeup of their team. I love John Collins. I love his game. And I really like Trey Young. And they have, what it seems at every position, they have, you know, the spot-up shooter. They have the playmaker. They have the defensive player in Clint Capella, the shot blocker, rip protector in Clint Capella as well. A shooter and worker. They have like all the tools to be a really, really good team. And in a few years down the line, this team is going to be ridiculous. But for now, Giannis is Giannis. Chris Middleton is finally starting to step up to the plate, and the rest of the guys around them are playing well. And Drew Holiday is going to basically guard whoever is playing well in the backcourt. So once he shuts that down, it's going to be hard for them to generate points like they've been doing. The senior player is not going to have a Ben Simmons who's not going to shoot the ball. So they're not going to have to worry about that issue. But I'm going to go ahead and take the Bucks. I will say that it goes to 7. I think that Atlanta's a very, very scrappy team. They don't like to lose, so they're gonna do everything in their power. But I think the experience of the Bucks, the firepower, is gonna overwhelm them overall, and they're gonna take the series.
So I'm gonna go with Bucks in 5, and I'm going with Bucks in 5 for a few reasons. One, I'll just get it out of the way. I think that Nate McMillan has done a marvelous job picking up as the interim midseason for Lloyd Pierce. And he's taking a team that was essentially going nowhere fast, and he's taking them to the conference finals. I think they've got a really deep team. Like, they've got Bogdanovich, they've got Gallinari, you've got another old, wily veteran like Lou Williams, hometown hero. You got Trae Young, who's really coming to his own. John Collins, good, solid player. Are they missing DeAndre Hunter? Yes, and I think that's one of the big issues they're going to have. They don't have DeAndre Hunter, and I think as far as Giannis is concerned, they don't have anybody that can guard Giannis. Brooklyn had a guy like Blake Griffin who had the length and, I guess you can say, the weight to cause Giannis problems. I think the person they're going to have to put on Giannis is going to end up being John Collins. I don't think John Collins physically has the strength to stop Giannis from getting to the basket. And now we know Giannis only has 3 moves. Buffalo to the basket, like Derrick Henry. Buffalo to the basket, spin right, spin left. That's it. Yep. If John Collins can stop that, Atlanta got a great shot to win this. They do.
Yeah. And the case for Atlanta is, as great as the Bucks have been regular season wise, and, you know, they've had a top defense, I think 2 out of 3 years that who knows has been there. What's the one flaw of their defense? They give up the most threes in the league. They have a philosophy to where they don't want paint touches, right? So they're going to give up threes in a three happy NBA. Atlanta shoots them as well as anybody does, especially if they get hot in Atlanta. So it will be interesting to see if John Collins and if they can make that wall that everybody talks about to stop Giannis. If they can stop him and force Chris Middleton and Drew Holiday to beat you and they're hitting shots, they definitely have a chance. But I think that Milwaukee, I think that was Giannis's signature series so far. You know, he hadn't won a big playoff series, in my opinion. But you beat Detroit, you beat Boston, you beat, who did they beat last year in the first round? I think they beat Orlando. Yeah. I mean, at this point, and then they beat Miami this year. But at this point, what signature series did you have? You didn't have one. This was the one. This was your coming out party. So now what will you do? Kind of like the same thing with Phoenix. You're coming off a high. What are you going to do to keep that momentum riding?
Absolutely. We're going to have to leave it right there, everybody. We are out of time here on the Game Plan Podcast. So I got to thank everybody for joining me. Kennedy Biller, once again, appreciate you, my man.
Yes, sir. No problem.
And where can the folks find you on Twitter, Instagram, everything like that?
You can find me on Twitter _KennedyMiller_Kennedy, as in the former senator, Robert Kennedy. And I got to find another Miller, the NBA Hall of Famer, Reggie Miller, _KennedyMiller_.
Twitterless Aaron.
Percy Miller.
Oh.
Who?
P. Percy. Miller.
Okay. P. Miller, Master P. Okay.
Yes, sir.
I'm using that for the next one.
Yes, I really appreciate you guys having me on once again. My name is Aaron O'Connor Poole. You can find me on Instagram at Aaron the Great _. Again, that is Aaron, AARON, the Great, for the greatest, 2 underscores.
All right. You can find me on Twitter at Alex Goodwin TSM. Again, that's on Twitter at Alex Goodwin TSM. That's T as in Tangeray, S as in Saki, M as in Marmalade. For Kennedy Miller and Aaron O'Connor Fua, Alex Goodwin is my name. You've been listening to the Game Plan Podcast. We'll see you next time.